Each year, millions of Americans pull up stakes and move to another part of the country. We leave behind friends, family, and that important, intangible sense of community, a kind of a thread that binds or ties families and families' friends together. It's hard to grow roots, even if you should stay in one place for 5 to 10 years, and it seems like everybody else is on the move. And they tend to pass in and out of your life just like actors in a disjointed play of some sort. All this, of course, provides a fertile breeding ground for the problems of loneliness, and experts agree that loneliness may be our number one emotional and psychological problem. But what is loneliness exactly? It's more than just being alone. A lot of people living all by themselves are not really what you would call lonely. They're quite fulfilled. So loneliness usually brings to mind images of future shocked elderly people sitting on the park bench feeding the pigeons, shut in, stagnating and rocking, staring at the wall in convalescent homes, or many people who have lonely jobs like a night watchman or a lighthouse keeper. But loneliness is not limited to a few isolated members of the human race. You can find lonely people everywhere. A lot of them are sitting in front of this television set right this moment. They're all the way from kindergarten to the park bench. In fact, because of the way our lonely society is structured, loneliness hits nearly all of us from time to time without regard to age or social standing. So in this program, we're going to be hearing from three experts in the field of mental health who have dealt very intimately with loneliness in its many aspects. First, Dr. John Doucet, who is assistant clinical professor at the University of California Medical School in San Francisco and author of the new bestseller called Egograms. Dr. William Glasser, who is author and head of the Institute for Reality Therapy in West Los Angeles, and Jan Gendron, who is youth counselor and former alcoholic and drug addict.
Loneliness is one of the major problems that I, and I'm sure many of my colleagues, see in our psychiatric and psychological practices. Loneliness can be at the root of many, many problems. Very seldom does someone come into my office and say to me, I am lonely. They usually come in and say, I'm overweight, I'm unhappy, life is boring to me, I drink too much, I can't sleep at night. At the foundation of this is the fact that as human beings, they are lonely.
Loneliness is tied to a lot of other things. Loneliness is tied to rejection, which is, you know, you reject me and I feel lonely, I feel put down. Loneliness is tied to lack of success. When you see a lot of people succeeding and you're not, you don't want to be around the people that are succeeding because it feels even more uncomfortable. So you retreat further because it's uncomfortable to be unsuccessful around successful people. So loneliness is tied to almost all of the psychological problems that I can think of.
You know, a lot of kids, if they're popular in school and have lots of friends, they just assume that they are not lonely, you know, and that there's something else wrong, you know. And a lot of the kids that I work with who are drinking, they never relate these strange feelings that they have with maybe they're lonely. You know, maybe they don't feel a part of. And so, you know, they naturally, I know for me, I felt I had some deep-seated problem and I was afraid to tell anybody about it, so I drank and I used drugs. And the reality of it was I was lonely.
if you feel that you're not comfortable for some reason or other with people, they really won't accept you. Then the more you're among people, the more painful it is. Suppose that you're hungry. Give you a simple example. You're very hungry. Would you prefer to be hungry, say, in this studio here with no food around, or would you prefer to be hungry in a cafeteria with a huge buffet but they wouldn't let you eat? It's much more painful when you're hungry and you walk by a bakery, you go crazy just the smell of that bread baking, you know. So again, that's what loneliness in a crowd is. Here's all the people in the cafeteria, but none of them will come to you. So people who are lonely tend to be much more so in the presence of others than by themselves.
To me, being lonely was not having 15 friends. That was being lonely. Nobody ever said, you know, why don't you try being happy with yourself, Jan? You know, why don't you get to know Jan? I just assumed that you weren't lonely if you had, you know, 50 friends. And there were times that that's what I had in drug circles and my boozing circles. I had lots of people out there, you know, but it was like I had a glass wall around me. You know, I was still lonely.
Loneliness cuts across barriers of age, race, and social status to strike at almost all of us at one time or another. It's been described as an ache, an emptiness, a kind of a driving force and a pain that people will do almost anything to alleviate. I imagine that most of the neighborhood bars and an awful lot of the motion picture houses and even corner drug stores and little restaurants and diners and the like, a lot of times automobiles simply driving along the freeway, are peopled by individuals who simply couldn't stand staring at the four walls anymore, who even got tired of television and simply had to get out. And even though they are lonely in the middle of a crowd, they had to be around where other people are, where they're making noises and where they hear the tinkle of glasses and a rumble of conversation. You can be lonely when you're surrounded by friends or even smothered by family, but you can still be lonely because something is missing. And you're not having the type of human interaction you need, the quality of human conduct that staves off feelings of loneliness and depression. And such hidden loneliness can have extremely serious consequences.
When you're lonely, you may feel miserable, depressed, whatever the feeling is, but the pain just says do something very strongly, but doesn't really tell you what to do. So you still have to figure out what to do, and the more you hurt, the less likely you are to have the strength to figure it out. So the pain of loneliness is almost like a doubly disabled pain. It hurts, and it also doesn't really tell you how to solve the problem. You have to expend a lot of effort that you don't seem to have to solve the problem.
I would say when I was in junior high, I started drinking. And if I had known that what alcohol had done for me in the seventh grade when I was in the fourth grade, I probably would have started drinking then. But I started drinking, and that took away the loneliness for a while.
First thing they do when they're lonely is they begin to give up on people. They say, well, I can't be with people. It's just too painful. The second stage is they take some kind of a symptom, like they choose to be depressed. And now they can rationalize their loneliness by saying, well, if I weren't so depressed, I'd go to parties, but I'm just too depressed to go. Who would want to be around me? And the third choice they make is the choice to become addicted. Not all people make this choice, but the third possible and the weakest choice is, I don't need anybody. I'll get my pleasure from this chemical substance. And I'd say almost, well, chemically addicted people are, by their nature, people who are lonely.
I would come home and I would drink. And I would just forget. I remember when I was about 15, I had said something to myself. I said, I'm going to stay in oblivion as long as I can, just so I don't have to know what's wrong with me, why I'm different, why I don't have any friends.
When is it you started using drugs?
When the alcohol stopped working, and that was about my freshman year in high school. I started taking drugs, and that was even better because, you see, I could pass out and go for 2-3 days. Without knowing where I was or who I was.
So loneliness is a primary reason why people turn to drugs, alcohol, and other self-destructive behavior. Loneliness is a feeling of loss, grief, or emptiness, much like the grief a person experiences when a friend or relative dies or a marriage breaks up. The natural reaction to such a loss is anger, or anger disguised as depression. And chronic or deep depression can lead to mental breakdown, irrational behavior, physical illness, divorce, alcoholism, even drug addiction and suicide. Studies have shown that single, widowed, and divorced people are much more likely to come down with various diseases than married people. A recent report mentioned that coronary deaths among widows between 25 and 34 was 5 times that of married women in the same age group, and that when you look at all ages, divorced individuals are twice as likely as married ones to develop lung cancer or suffer a stroke. Cirrhosis of the liver is 7 times more common among divorced white males, and tuberculosis 10 times more common. Studies have also shown a correlation between the health of a community and how family-oriented and close-knit that group is. When families have close ties, the number of heart attack lowers dramatically compared to the communities where there is a great emphasis on the so-called singles lifestyle. That means that if we find a way to combat loneliness, it'll go a long way toward elimination of the root cause of disease and a lot of other negative things that people find themselves involved in. In a moment, we'll be back with some helpful suggestions on how you can combat loneliness in your own private life.
Plain Truth, the international publication of understanding. Plain Truth. Information you need in today's changing society. Plain Truth. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. For your free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Here's that magazine of Plain Truth. All you've got to do is pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area 213. The number is 577-5225. In many issues, like this one that I'm holding, we have articles on the family. This says, Bring Back the Family, one very good, incisive article. Another one, Sex Education, What Are Your Children Learning? It's absolutely free of charge. It costs you a free telephone call. We even pay the telephone bill if you'd like to send for it right away. The telephone number again is 800-423-4444, or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225. Now for some positive advice on how to deal with loneliness in your own life and how you might be able to help erase this emptiness in the lives of others that you come in contact with. We're talking again with Jean Gendron, who is youth counselor and former alcoholic and drug addict, about how she handles the problem of loneliness in the young people with whom she works.
When you're lonely, you start to withdraw and get inside yourself, and you can't see anything that's going out on the outside, and you become self-obsessed. And if you're not getting anything out and just stuffing and stuffing the feelings in and the feelings of loneliness, sooner or later those feelings have to come out. Now, whether they come out with drugs, alcohol, or whatever type of escape, you know, there's many, many different types of escape.
If they're lonely, why is it they can't just go out and seek companionship openly?
Well, I guess that's the fear of rejection, the fear of the unknown. You know, nobody wants to go into a party and say, hey, I'm lonely, somebody be my friend. And so instead of doing that, the escape is the easier, softer way. You know, give me a glass of wine or a joint or whatever. Because I don't want to face the reality of what I am, you know. And I think today more and more kids are becoming aware of this in school, and a lot of the kids that I see and I counsel, they're getting into that, getting in touch with what's really going on inside, you know. Because I think more and more kids are realizing that booze isn't the answer.
Finding out what's inside you. Most of us react to the world totally unaware of our feelings and needs and longings beneath the surface. I have felt for many years that perhaps the greatest need we all have is what I call the need to be understood. When you have some of the deepest problems or the deepest hopes, dreams, or aspirations, or perhaps some of the most uncontrollable fears or neuroses, whatever it is that you have going on inside of you, your deepest, most abiding need is another human being that you really love, you really enjoy, you have total confidence in, and to know that that human individual understands fully, as deeply as you're able to express it, and even beyond your ability to express it, exactly the way you feel. Anyone who has that kind of a companion who understands totally the way he or she feels can never be a lonely person. If we could get to know intimately our own selves a bit better, we'd be able to control some of the illogical or even downright destructive ways we act toward ourselves and other people. It happens to be a well-known fact that many mass murderers were loners. Charles Whitman, Von Oren Greenwood, Richard Speck, who killed those eight nurses in Chicago, David Henley, and very recently the son of Sam, all were very lonely people who expressed their pain and violence toward those they killed. They may have always been, according to police, polite or good neighbors or good quiet boys, but their lives were missing anything more than a minimal amount of human social contact. One man who's done a lot of work with lonely people and helped them overcome this void in their lives is Dr. John M. Doucet, who is author of a new book which contains a great deal of helpful information on learning how to understand your emotional makeup.
I have written this in a book entitled Egograms, How I See You and You See Me, which is published by Harper & Row. And this is about an excellent tool for understanding loneliness and for changing loneliness, for not being lonely, as well as understanding other human psychological problems and relationship problems. What an egogram is, it's a bar graph which shows how these five basic psychological forces line up in any one individual. And the five forces are criticism, as shown in cartoon character by the judge. Criticism is when I would be a critic, put my finger up, stand up for my own rights, or criticize you. Nurturing is shown by the nice mommy with her little baby. That is the giving part, the good mommy or the good daddy that likes to see things grow. Adult, as shown by the businessman in the gray flannel suit, that's the thinking, the scientist in us. The free child, shown by the dancing little girl, having fun and frolic. The free child force is the creativity, the fun-loving part. The part that has new ideas, writes poems, and the adapted child, shown by the young man there that's sitting in a sulking sort of a manner. The adapted child part in a person is the one that compromises, does what he or she is supposed to do. And what I have found in people that are lonely is that there's no one particular egogram that fits all lonely people. But on an egogram, I have found that more lonely people have low nurturing. Nurturing to other people as well as to themselves.
Nurturing other people, caring for other people, that's what it's all about. In order to get rid of loneliness, it's necessary to develop an outgoing concern for the other guy. There are many ways for you to reach out, but it's up to you to find the one that needs doing, the one thing in your particular corner of the world that you need to do more than anything else, and to work on and develop your own ability and to be nurturing to other people.
People can become nurturing, can pay attention to this by empathy, by looking around and finding someone that is lonely like they are, calling them up, giving them words, doing something for them. I can almost guarantee when you do something for somebody, unless they're very unusual, they'll give you back the favor.
I think the one of the best antidotes for loneliness is to develop a skill of some kind or an interest or a hobby or whatever you want to call it, and then engage in this skill with other people, and they can accept you better. They don't have to just accept you. That's hard. If I just come to you and say, I'm lonely, love me, it's a very difficult thing for you to do. But if I come to you and say, hey, how'd you like to hit the tennis ball with me? That you can do much more easily. I don't put such a strain on you. Then if in the course of hitting the ball and getting tired, maybe going afterwards for a drink or a cup of coffee or something, we get to talking, we've used an activity to get to the problem.
And sometimes I just feel lonely just because I feel lonely, and I get up and I either turn on some music or I do some sewing and I get out of myself, you know, and not dwell on poor me, what's wrong with me, I'm still 6 foot tall and, you know, dark hair, and I wish I had blonde hair. The fact is I'm 6 foot tall, I got dark hair, and let's accept the facts of what's going on and, you know, go on from there. You know, because so many kids, you know, hate themselves and they hate where they're at, and a lot of the things that kids are going through, they can't change, you know, and it's learning to accept those things And, you know, if you can change the things you can, change them. If you can't, accept them.
I do a type of psychotherapy known as transactional analysis, where we keenly pay attention to what goes on between human beings in a social situation. And the lonely, this lonely lady, as we would notice in the group, would not nurture other people. When they were feeling bad, she would look at her watch, hoping that she got her share, always wanting to get more for herself, but not recognizing that by paying attention, empathizing, and giving to other people, they immediately would come back and give more to her. And thus, as she carries that out of the room and into life, that nurturing quality, which was so low, becomes the way she overcomes loneliness.
If we only could, you know, see ourselves as others see us, I'm not sure we would really want to. It's supposed to be very good medicine for analyzing what areas we personally need to build up, and terribly important in conquering loneliness, but you can't bug everybody's bedroom telephones, and there's no real way that you as a human being with our own limitations, with our remarkably complex defense mechanisms of admitting into our minds areas where we fail, various parts of our personality and character that are really flawed, it's not an easy task to really see ourselves as others see us. And people may be reacting to us in a way that we really don't want. But you can control your actions once you're aware of them. The more you're aware of yourself, of why you react the way you do, you can learn to accept others and not be so critical of their personal idiosyncrasies or opinions, and you can work on building up the part of your personality that gives other people the concern and attention that they so desperately need.
But genuine, authentic nurturing is, to me, the number one cure of loneliness. Being able to nurture someone, being able to give of yourself, will perhaps bring back more rewards, more human rewards, than any single thing I can think of.
If you just come to a person and say, I'm lonely, give to me, you're going to ordinarily find another lonely person that's looking for someone to give to them. So the way you break this deal is to say, I'm lonely, share something with me. That's the real key. Share a book, share a movie, share a tennis game, share a meal, share a walk on the beach. But if you just say, give me, that frightens people and they leave. But if you say, share, that's the key. And from sharing comes giving.
Free copy of Building a Happy Family. Call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Let me send you this free article, actually a collection of several very fine articles from the Plain Truth magazine. In this one, Fighting Fair in Love and Marriage, Closing the Generation Gap, Respecting Everybody's Human Potential, Children Are People Too, an article, and The Family That Eats Together. Very few families do, it seems. You can have this absolutely free if you'll pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Loneliness is probably one of the root causes of much of the self-destructive behavior around us in society, like drug addiction, alcoholism, and even suicide, because people are doing almost anything to escape the painful reality of empty lives. And is it only coincidence that as all of these various behaviors are on the rise, we also see a breakdown in the structure of the home and the family, the one institution that ought to serve as a buffer against any loneliness? Our basic nuclear family, consisting of father, mother, and children, has been torn out of the larger context of an extended family, uncles, aunts, grandparents, and even familiar neighbors, who took emotional pressure off the family and enabled it to survive without an inordinate amount of friction. We demand more emotional substance from a nuclear family than it's capable of giving. And the conflict and the tensions that result when these demands aren't met are a force that drives family members further into autonomous shells. What's getting me the typical pattern of all members of the family is simply everybody goes his separate way. Dad goes to work, mom goes to work or other activity, kids go to school to be with their peer group, and the family is anything but a unit where loneliness is banished.
The suicide rate among teenagers is very high, you know, and why does a teenager kill himself? It seems to me that when you're young, your sensitivity to others is even more acute than when you grow older. At least it seemed that way to me when I was growing up. And so I was more concerned about how I looked and if I had a pimple on my face and things like that when I was 16 than I do now. And so I think that especially, not so much perhaps in pre-teenagers when kids are, they don't feel that social urge and the sexual urge, which really has to culminate in a social urge, they don't feel that so much maybe, and they're more in with their parents and things like that. But when you get to the teenage years, your chances of feeling unaccepted rise tremendously.
We're talking about some horrible experiences of violence in my life, of my parents drinking, and you know, my life is not all that glamorous. And even today, I mean, you know, I've got a mother, a father, and a brother, and all of them are alcoholics. You know, that was enough to keep me drunk for years. You know, poor me. I don't have the Ozzy and Harriet setup that I wish I had. But you see, I can't keep kicking myself for those things.
The obvious problem is the disintegration of the American family. There is no such thing as a really lonely person who will be antisocial, who will be given to drug addiction or alcoholism. It will be one of these loners who decides to go out and kill about 20 or 30 people because of some rage inside himself. It can't happen in the midst of a solid, balanced, normal family environment. You need to pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number I gave you and get this very interesting collection of articles on fighting fair in love and marriage, closing the generation gap, respecting everybody's human potential. Children are people too, and the one that says the family that eats together obviously stays together, entitled Building a Happy Family. It's yours absolutely free for the free telephone call that we pay for, 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225. Don't forget to ask the operator for your free subscription to the Plain Truth magazine. For example, in this one issue, an article on Bring Back the Family, and also sex education. What are your children learning in school? The Plain Truth, absolutely free of charge. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.